With the anniversary only days away, we thought it was time to check if the thinking that brought down Gough Whitlam 50 years ago is still alive in the Liberal Party. Have they any regrets about the dismissal? Any second thoughts? Would they do it all over again? To answer for them, the Liberal Party nominated the former Shadow Attorney General, now Shadow Education Minister, Julian Lisa. Now, Julian cut his teeth working for John Howard on the No campaign that dashed Republican hopes in the referendum of 1999. Last year, he left Peter Dutton's shadow cabinet in order to campaign for The Voice. He is, of course, from way, way back, a lawyer. Julian, welcome to Late Night Live.
Great to be with you, David.
Julian, I was a rookie journalist when Kerr sacked Whitlam. Where were you on the day?
I suspect, in my mother's tummy. It's about 6 months before I was born.
Yes, I did the maths, and I'm glad you said so. You were in vitro at the time. Nevertheless, 50 years down the track, you've had a good time to think about this. And what do the Liberals now think about the dismissal? Has the party any regrets? Do they stand with Kerr 100%? Where are they?
No, I don't think there are regrets. I think we do stand with the actions of our colleagues at that time, the Liberal opposition under Malcolm Fraser. We stand with Sir John Kerr, who did his duty, and with Sir Garfield Barwick, who provided advice to John Kerr in that regard. And the principle here that the framers created a constitution with co-equal houses, except in the fact that the Senate couldn't initiate a money bill or amend a money bill. And that means that the Australian Federation is different to other places. The basic principle is that a government that can't guarantee supply needs to offer its resignation and call for a general election. And that was the principle that Kerr was trying to get Whitlam to do. People forget now, they think blocking supply was such a one-off radical idea in 1975. The truth is the Labor Party in opposition, before Whitlam came to government, had sought to block supply on 170 occasions.
Blocking supply was a pretty standard political, or threatening to block supply, threatening. It's a pretty standard political tactic. And what's more, Lionel Murphy and Gough Whitlam both defended the tactic in the late 1960s. So no difference there. But shall we go through this step by step?
Sure.
Firstly, what does a politician in the House of Representatives need to form a government?
Well, you need to have the confidence of the House, which means effectively that you need to have a majority on the floor of the House, or if you can't have a majority from your own party, as you get occasionally in hung parliaments, you need to have some sort of arrangement with people on the crossbench or in a coalition of parties where they will agree to back you in a confidence motion. Because if you fail to win a confidence motion in the House of Representatives, that's another occasion where you need to go to the Governor-General and offer your resignation.
But you also, of course, need supply. You can't
you
govern
do.
Without supply.
You absolutely can't govern without supply. And that's, that is true. I mean, and there are conventions in relation to this that go back to Britain. They go to some of the colonial parliaments and some of the state parliaments as well.
So, if you have confidence and supply, you can govern.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Now, from about September, at least, of 1975, Sir John Kerr was getting worried because the notion of blocking supply was once again in the air. And he began to talk to a number of people about perhaps him having to intervene to resolve the issue. And he talked to the Prince of Wales at the independence celebrations in Port Moresby. He was corresponding with the Queen's private secretary. He was corresponding with the Queen's deputy private secretary. He was at various times in discussion with a number of his former colleagues in the law. And at various points, he was in discussion with the Chief Justice of Australia, Sir Garfield Barwick. But he was not talking to the Prime Minister. Now, what does the Liberal Party think of that these days?
Well, I don't think that's entirely true. I mean, he was talking to the Prime Minister and, you know, there were occasions where the Prime Minister had indicated at different times that, you know, there might be a situation, as he said in October 1975 at a state banquet held at Government House in honour of Tun Abdul Razak, the then Malaysian Prime Minister, that it might be a question of who got to the palace first. So Whitlam
was
well aware.
That was a joke, though, wasn't it? That was clearly delivered as a joke, and the people present laughed.
Well, that may be the case, but it at least indicates that Whitlam was well and truly aware of the range of options that Kerr might have. and at different times Kerr sought advice, including trying to seek advice from the First Law Office of the Attorney General and the Solicitor General. He had advice that was presented to him by Bob Ellicott, who was a former Solicitor General of the Commonwealth, who was
at then, the Liberal
at
Party.
Yes, indeed, and at that point he was the Shadow Attorney General. And John Kerr himself, I think it's important to note, was himself a very, very distinguished Australian lawyer, because he was a cautious person. I think he was, trying to take soundings for what could have been and ultimately was a very difficult decision.
And what's more, in many of those conversations, all the way up to November the 11th, Kerr was making it clear that fundamental to his thinking was the need to preserve his own job, that whatever he did had to be done in a way where his position was not challengeable. Now, what does the Liberal Party think of that as a basic strategy to solve a crisis?
Well, the Governor-General's role under Section 61 of the Constitution is to maintain the Constitution. And what does that mean? That, you know, he was effectively the umpire in relation to the policing of the conventions and to ensure that proper legal constitutional government was maintained. And I think he was concerned that, that he was able to exercise his functions properly in that regard. And ultimately, what was his function? What was the effect of the dismissal? The effect of the dismissal was letting Australians have their say, and they overwhelmingly backed his decision.
Oh, Julian, I'm trying to be so orderly here.
Sorry, David.
You know, so sort of step at a time. We'll get to that. Okay. Now, there's a huge political crisis going on. The Whitlam government is in the poo. There's no doubt whatever about that. It's very, very clear to Whitlam that if he goes to the same sort of a double dissolution election that he did in 1974, he'd be thumped. But there is something he can do, which is go to a half Senate election. And because there had been some retirements in the Senate and some odd appointments by the Queensland and New South Wales governments, there were some appointments, two Labor senators, one died, one retired, and they were replaced with really figures who weren't Labor figures. But that's now against the law, isn't it?
Well, you'll remember in 1977 there was a referendum. It's one of the very few successful referendum questions that were carried. And that dealt with how you replace Senate casual vacancies. And you have to replace somebody in the Senate casual vacancy from the same party.
So we don't even have to discuss that because it's been fixed by referendum. That's a blessing, isn't it?
That's right. I agree with that.
So there's this huge crisis going on, and Whitlam decides that he will go for a half-Senate election, which, on all calculations, will actually deliver him control of the Senate.
Well, David, I think that's a big leap of faith to say
But that was the danger, wasn't it, for Fraser? There was a real danger here that once you, for the first time, you had senators being elected in the ACT and the Northern Territory, and the two improperly replaced senators would now be properly elected. There was a strong chance that Whitlam would get control of the Senate.
I'm not sure that was a calculation he made. I think he was playing a politics of brinkmanship, and he wanted to do everything he could to bring the government down, and that's why they went to the extent of blocking supply and acting the way he did.
Talking about brinks, let's get there. At about noon on November the 11th, 1975, Whitlam, having determined that he wanted a half-Senate election, went around to see Kerr and presented him with that advice. Now, at that point, Kerr held no discussions with him, offered him no alternatives, simply handed him a piece of paper, sacking him. Now, this, in many ways, I think, looking back over those 50 years, becomes the absolute key point of this whole schmozzle. There was no discussion between Prime Minister and Governor General, because the Governor General is supposed, in constitutional terms, to advise and warn. He did neither of those things.
Well, I think you've short-circuited the conversation that happened there. I think Kerr asked Whitlam, from recollection, will you advise a double dissolution? Whitlam said no, he was there to advise a half-Senate election.
Yep.
And then Kerr said, well, you leave me with no choice, and gave him the papers. And then I think Whitlam looked around for a phone or something like that, and they shook hands, and Kerr said words to the effect, you know, we'll all have to live with ourselves then, or we'll have to live with this then.
Yeah,
I think that's something along the lines.
But Julian, the key thing here is that Kerr says, that leaves me with no alternative.
Because yes, that's right.
That's not true, is it? Because there were several alternatives open to Kerr at that moment, and I would have thought the Liberal Party, looking to the way in which our constitution works, would now think that Kerr and Whitlam should have had a conversation, that at least Kerr could have said, look, if you are intending to stick with that advice, I'm going to have to sack you. Now, look, do you really want that to happen?
Well, David, by the same token, Gough Whitlam could have said to him, what do I need to do? Why don't I advise you, therefore, of a double dissolution election? Instead, he left the building and went off and had a steak at the lodge.
I
understand the point
sacked.
You're getting at.
He had been sacked.
Well, he was given papers. He could have said to the Governor-General, look, if that is my only alternative, I advise a double dissolution election. If that was his alternative, he had every right to do that, but he chose not to. Now, the question that you're asking here, it's a really interesting one, because there were so many matters that, you know, if we were talking about this 10 years ago or 20 or 30 years ago, there'd be all sorts of issues of disagreement. But now it seems that this is really the only issue of disagreement. To what extent should Fraser have, Kerr have warned Whitlam? And the reason I think that Kerr didn't give Whitlam a more extensive warning, as it were, was firstly that event with Tun Abdul Razak, because he felt that Whitlam was going to go to the palace and remove him because of the comments that Whitlam had made. You know, who will get to the palace first? Secondly, Whitlam had come in on the on that day, on the 11th of November, and advised a half Senate election. That was his choice. He could have advised a double dissolution.
Yep.
Or he could have said as well, look, okay, I hear you, I will advise a double dissolution. But thirdly, I go back to the point I made earlier, that it's the Governor-General's job to maintain the constitution. And I think Kerr felt that it would be a dereliction of his duty for him to be sacked and put somebody else in that position.
Troy Bramston, who's written a new biography of Whitlam, has revealed in The Australian today that Malcolm Fraser drafted an obituary for Whitlam. And in that draft obituary, never delivered, Malcolm Fraser said there should have been more consideration and more conversation between Whitlam and Kerr. He acknowledged the failure of Kerr to warn as a weakness in the whole scheme.
Well, Malcolm Fraser has reflected on a whole range of issues subsequent to being Prime Minister, where he's come out of different views than those views that he had at the time of his Prime Ministership. So I'm not completely surprised to hear that.
But Julian, this is the central constitutional moment. This is the Prime Minister in the presence of the monarch. That's the key thing, isn't it? The conversation, there was none. Here's the letter, you're dismissed.
Well, I think you're putting a particular spin on it, David. I don't think that is a completely fair reading of that conversation. And as I said, it was open to Whitlam to advise a double dissolution election. And let's remember, what was the point of this? You had a situation where the Whitlam government could not govern because it could not get supply. It had failed, those bills had failed to pass the Senate. How did it get resolved? John Kerr sent for Malcolm Fraser because he could advise a double dissolution election. So ultimately the Australian people could resolve this issue. And the usual conventions is if you cannot govern without supply, so if you can't get supply, you need to have a double dissolution and let the Australian people have their say. It was actually, Kerr was the guardian of our democracy in this moment.
That is sweet angels and anthems in the background. Julian, as you know, supply had not run out, and the Prime Minister has the constitutional right to contest the squabble between him and the opposition all the way to the brink. And the supply had not run out. He had money.
Well, it was starting to run out already. There were his ministers and officials that were talking about in areas like housing that they weren't able to pay they're public servants. The other thing was you were looking at the practical issue of when was the last date that you could possibly hold an election, and the Electoral Commission advised it was December 13. And as I say, in the counterfactual, there is no guarantee you would have got any relief, and based on what happened in the 1975 election, the Senate situation would have been worse for the government, and a new Senate wouldn't have convened at any rate until the following July.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Julian Leeser in the most calm and considered way about 50 years' reflection on the sacking and where the Liberal Party is today. And I think we now have more clarity on this, that the Liberal Party is not concerned that supply had not run out. The Liberal Party is not concerned that there was no real discussion between Kerr and Whitlam before Whitlam was sacked. And now, Julian, I want to ask you what happens after the sacking, whether the Liberal Party is concerned about the events later on that afternoon. Because Fraser accepted his caretaker assignment, so we know that Kerr was giving to somebody who did not have the numbers in the House of Representatives the job of being Prime Minister. Now, that's okay with you?
Yes, because Fraser had two roles. Pass the supply bills and advise a general election, a double dissolution election. And
okay,
that's exactly what he did.
So they were the roles he was given at 1:30. Now, at 2 o'clock, through some extraordinary schmozzle by the Labor Party, I'm not for a moment suggesting that the Labor Party handled this day particularly well, but through some schmozzle, supply was passed. Now, from 2 o'clock on November the 11th, money was no longer the problem. So then at 3:15... the House of Representatives passed a vote of no confidence in Malcolm Fraser. Now, you remember earlier in our conversation, you said the two things you need to rule, to govern in Australia, are confidence and supply. So at 3:15, Whitlam had confidence and supply.
But he was no longer the Prime Minister.
No, that's the point. That's right.
And Fraser, having lost the vote of confidence, had already advised a double dissolution election.
Yes, but the Speaker now makes his way out to Yarralumla to inform the Governor-General that Edward Gough Whitlam has the confidence of the House of Representatives, and it is the will of the House of Representatives that he be re-sworn as Prime Minister, and look, he's got all the money he needs for the next year. And at this point, the Governor-General refuses to see the Speaker. Now, is the Liberal Party happy with the Governor-General refusing to see the Speaker?
Well, in circumstances where the Australian people were going to already have their say because of the advice that the Governor-General had already got, yes.
That's very interesting. Now, of course, it was always open to Kerr, go back to his office for a second, it was always open to Kerr to say to Whitlam, you have to take the nation to a general election. It was always open. But the problem there for Kerr, of course, was that he feared he might lose his job if Whitlam stayed in office.
Well, I don't think that that's true.
Well, he has said so.
No.
Because Kerr has said
Whitlam could have advised taking the nation to a double dissolution election. Had he advised that when he first went to see Kerr on the 11th of November, he would have still been Prime Minister and he would have taken the country to a double dissolution election. That was the alternative for Whitlam
right.
on that day.
Can you sort of reduce to a rule for future knowledge? Because this is a very important conversation, because this is about how Australia is governed. Now, can you reduce to a rule those occasions on which a Governor General is entitled to refuse the advice of his Prime Minister?
Well, I think as somebody who was very involved in the Republic referendum, including a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, and I've read much on these issues, broadly, you know, a Governor-General can exercise reserve powers, in other words, powers without advice, where a government where there's no Prime Minister, for instance, and in 1967 when Harold Holt drowned.
But that's not the situation here.
No,
he is refusing the advice of his Prime Minister. What What's the rule there? When can that happen?
Well, when a Prime Minister fails to secure supply, or when a Prime Minister loses a vote of confidence, those are the occasions that he can refuse that advice. But what you're saying in relation to the afternoon events there, Fraser had already given the advice. And ultimately, the Governor-General's role is to ensure that the Australian people are the ultimate arbiters of these issues. And that's what he did. Mm. Fraser had given him the advice. It was the only was one of only two conditions of his prime ministership. Pass the supply bills and send this matter to the people. And that's exactly what he did. And the people endorsed Kerr and Fraser.
They certainly did.
Overwhelmingly.
Overwhelmingly. But Julian, this is a point of real importance. At 3:16, about an hour before Kerr's private secretary came to the steps of Parliament House to dissolve the House. At that time, a man other than Fraser had the confidence of the House of Representatives, and there was money. At that point, you are sacking a man who has all of the characteristics of lawful government, and the Liberal Party is not concerned about that.
But the only reason he was able to get supply was because Fraser was able to guarantee supply. That's the first point. And the second point, the only reason Fraser was Prime Minister was to ensure that the Governor-General had advice to call a general election to let the Australian people decide.
But that's a deal between the Governor-General and a politician.
To let the Australian people determine the outcome.
The Parliament has now said, Gough Whitlam is our leader and there was supply. So this is the Governor-General dismissing Whitlam for a second time, isn't it?
No, it's because the only reason that Fraser was made Prime Minister was because he could secure supply. It was Fraser who secured supply, not Whitlam. And it was Fraser who was the caretaker Prime Minister because it was his job to advise the double dissolution election, which he did.
But constitutionally, it doesn't matter who gets supply, does it? It's just supply. It's the money of the government. And it doesn't belong to Fraser, it doesn't belong to the Liberal Party, it belongs to whoever is governing.
It belongs to the Australian people, ultimately.
Ultimately.
And the idea was that Sir John Kerr wanted the Australian people to have their say on these matters, and that is in accordance with the convention, where a government that cannot secure supply, which the Whitlam government was not able to do, should resign and let the Australian people have their say.
Julian, the Whitlam government still had supply, the old supply, on November the 11th, 1975, and there were at least two Liberal Party senators in the upper house who were wavering on whether to push this thing over the brink. Whitlam had the right, did he not, to contest that to the edge of the brink, and the brink was not there yet. So is the Liberal Party happy for the Governor-General to intervene, as was the case here, before supply ran out, before the political process had reached its conclusion?
Yes, because part of the matters that Kerr had to take into account was the actual practicality of holding an election. And the first thing I would say is that, you know, this was November 11. They had to have an election on the 13th of December because it was the last practical date. You couldn't have had a summer where you had an election in the middle of the summer because you wouldn't have been able to staff the polling booths with AEC workers who are often school teachers and the like.
Julian, though, I love this point about the practical election. So this mighty constitutional crisis is in some way resolved because it would be a bit inconvenient to hold an election during summer. That's fine by the Liberal Party?
It's more than a bit inconvenient. We're talking about the democracy of the country here and how you can ensure that Australians are properly going to be able to resolve this crisis at a vote at the ballot box. I know some of Kerr's detractors and Whitlam's cheer squad like to think what Sir John Kerr did was a coup. A coup is the sort of thing you see in Fiji where people hang on to power for a long time without elections. What he did was to ensure the Constitution functioned as it was imagined by the framers, which was when a government was unable to get supply, that the issue was ultimately resolved by we the people.
So, 50 years down the track, the Liberal Party stands with Kerr.
Yes, we do.
Julian, thanks so much for talking to us on Late Night Live.
Thank you, David.